Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey everyone, it's time for episode 35 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. So as usual, some housekeeping stuff before we get into the actual guest. So guys, as always, it is such a huge help to us if you leave a review for us on iTunes. It won't take you long and it really does mean the world to me. So please head on over to iTunes and just write a few words about why you enjoy the show. Also, our sponsors, if you support them, you support the show as well. And you can also get some really cool stuff. First off is our own brand of fantastic jiu-jitsu gear and instructional videos, and you can find that at store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com. If you use the code podcast, you'll get 10% of anything in the store. And if you want to try CBD oil, which is all the rage for athletes and people putting their bodies through intense training, helps with relaxation and helps to reduce inflammation, head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the code JJBTruth to get 10 quid, 10 pounds off your first order. That's for customers in the UK. And then I wanted to let you guys know that I am just putting the finishing touches on the Master Academy. I know I said it would be ready by this week, but my travel schedule's been mad. I've been on the road for 16 days and I just got home. So I'm going to put a bit more work into it this week, and it will be ready within 7 or 8 days. So keep an eye out. I will send you guys all a special discount if you're on our mailing list, and I'll also give you access to that discount through the show as well. So keep an ear to the ground for that. It's coming very soon, the Master Academy. That is my online membership academy where I believe you will learn some of the best jiu-jitsu in the world. And without further ado, let's get into the show with Chuck J. Ryland. He is the author of a very entertaining and eye-opening book called Motivation, Stories on Life and Success from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Black Belts. My friend Nick Raphael gave me a copy of this book, and I didn't know what to expect. It was way better than I could have hoped. Basically, Chuck has interviewed, I think it's 12 Jiu-Jitsu Black Belts from that he knows or that he's been put in touch with, and he's asked about their life stories. And it's amazing to hear what these guys went through. Absolutely amazing. Very cool. I highly recommend that book. He's got another book called Shots Fired, which is about police shootings and why they happen. That's also pretty cool. But let me leave it to him to tell you all about his work. So here we go. Here is episode 35, Chuck J. Ryland. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is episode number 35, and I'm here with Chuck Ryland. Chuck is the author of a bunch of books. All of them seem really interesting, but I've only read one of them, which is the one on Jiu-Jitsu. It's called Motivation, Stories on Life and Success from BJJ Black Belts. Really, really cool book. And that's the main reason I wanted to have Chuck on the show is I read this book and enjoyed it. And I gave it to one of our previous guests and my close friend, Nick Raphael, and he loved it as well. And Chuck and I have been chatting a bit on Facebook, and I thought this is the exact kind of guest I'd want to have on the show. So Chuck, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I'm glad to get on the phone with you and get a chance to talk to you there. I appreciate it.
Cool, bud. So Chuck, before we even get on to the jiu-jitsu specific stuff and talk about the motivation book, you've got quite an interesting lifestyle that you've set up for yourself. It's my understanding that at the moment you're a kind of a life coach. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's kind of about a third of what I spend my time on. The other third of the time would be writing, and then I'm still teaching at the police academy.
Okay, what are you teaching at the police academy?
I teach what it's called arrest and control, but it's basically a jiu-jitsu class, but we do it's focused on police stuff, so there's handcuffing and some other stuff involved.
Oh, cool. That sounds pretty cool. It's something I'd like to get involved with as well at some point. So according to your bio, you and your family spend large portions of the year in different countries and different places like Costa Rica and China and things like that. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you managed to set up your lifestyle so that you were able to do that?
Yeah, I love to travel. There's some times of my life when I can travel more times than others, but, I used to be a cop for 15 years and then I ended up retiring after an injury. And so that gave me a little bit of freedom, but not enough to live on. So then I started doing what ultimately ended up becoming a coaching career and then a writing career. And that's what ultimately allowed me a lot more freedom to be able to travel and kind of show some of the world to my family and experience some things for myself.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, it's something that, you know, we're sold by many people, this idea that if you throw up an ebook, you're going to suddenly be earning $10,000 a month living on a desert island somewhere sipping pina coladas, which I think you and I both know is not necessarily the case, and that there's a lot more that goes into achieving like a decent quality lifestyle or lifestyle that entails that amount of freedom. And I guess that ties into the next thing I wanted to chat about, which is you have a book called The Perfect Life Manifesto. And the premise of that book is that it's my understanding, it's a goal setting book, and it teaches you how to set and achieve goals faster than with other methods. And I guess you are one of those people, you have an interesting overlap of skills. One of them is that you know how to live this awesome lifestyle, but you also know how to teach people to set the goals to achieve it. So I'd love to speak to you a little bit more about that. Let's say there's a kid out there, he's a blue belt, and he's 25 years old, he loves jiu-jitsu, but he hates his job, and he wants to, within 5 years, have a dream lifestyle. He wants this perfect life, and he wants to be having a passive income or just be able to teach or do jiu-jitsu all day long without having to worry about finances. What would you recommend him? How could he achieve those goals?
Man, you brought up so many interesting points in your question. And the first is, yeah, I think we all kind of started out buying into some of the hype, which maybe some of it started from that 4-hour work week a long time ago that many people read. And it's correct that people will sell you an idea, but it's far more complicated than that. I think the very first thing to acknowledge is that getting away from your job and doing something on your own is actually usually more of a much more difficult job, much more time consuming job. And so I think if you accept that going into it, that, hey, I may have to work 60 or 80 hours to ditch my 40-hour work week job. When you realize that, it kind of changes things. But then what changes is what you define as work. And so if teaching jiu-jitsu, for example, is your thing that you enjoy, you may put more hours into it, but you're not sitting in a cubicle. So I think the idea is, number one, be realistic and not think you're going to sell some little gadget on eBay or whatever and just kick back, like you said, drink pina coladas. That's the number one thing. The number two, that book that you had mentioned about the goal setting, it starts off with the premise of what is your why. What is the reason that you're doing these things? And I think you have to have a very defining driving force to motivate you to do something. And it's usually some sort of negative force that drives us where we want to get away from something. And I think, so for example, if you say, I want to lose some weight, but without the why, you're not going to have the discipline to keep doing what it takes to do that. So you have to start with why and get deep in your head of why this is bothering you or causing you pain to keep you motivated through those difficult times when you're pursuing these goals.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So, I mean, I want to drill a bit deeper down into this book is called The Perfect Life Manifesto. So I guess my first question, or my next question is, what to you does the perfect life look like? And I know it's different for everyone, but for you specifically.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it changes depending on where I'm at in my life. So what would have been the quote unquote perfect life in my 20s is very different than my 30s. And now I'm in my 40s. It's even different again. So for me today at 42 years old, I've really done a 180, where a perfect life to me is where I'm not doing things that I don't want to do. Now there's no, that's impossible. There's always things, you know, I have to go get gas in my car and I don't want to do that. But I mean, on a day in, day out where I'm not doing some sort of job that's not fulfilling. And so to answer your question specifically, what's fulfilling to me today is giving back to somebody. So I enjoy more helping somebody reach their goals than me getting something for myself. But in my 20s, I wanted a nice boat and a nice car. So I wanted something for me. So I was driven to get something for me. But so you can see as you age, hopefully you grow. And so right now, if I'm doing something day in and day out that I'm helping other people grow, quite honestly, that's the perfect life for me. And half of that is my son, you know, my family, helping him achieve his goals is a really big part of that for me. So it's part family, but part outside in the rest of the world too.
That's pretty noble. It's something I don't want to say it's an internal struggle, but it's something I question often, you know, because the world teaches us, or a lot of the enlightened people I consider enlightened, teach us that the pathway to happiness and fulfillment is actually you find it or you achieve it when you turn the focus from yourself to others, as you did going from your 20s to 30s. And I thoroughly enjoy helping other people, and a lot of what I do is aimed at helping other people. But I wonder, is that something you can only ever fully commit to when you've already taken care of yourself? Because I find it quite difficult to go help, you know, the people in my immediate surroundings or the wider community when it's an issue for me to pay my rent, or when I'm injured, or, you know, there's something immediate that I need to take care of. I was just thinking of, I saw an article yesterday about the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation and how they gave away $40 billion. And I was just thinking, yeah, that's cool. It's really not actually that difficult to give away $40 billion when you have $41 billion. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
So for me, I don't know, it's the survival versus altruism and trying to find a balance. And what are your thoughts on that, Chuck?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a really interesting discussion. And I agree with you completely, is that you have to look out for yourself first. So you can't be this starving artist that's giving away your art, right? You have to first figure out how to take care of yourself. But then the next question becomes is, what is that? What is taking care of yourself, and what is that level? So it's very easy for me to say it's fulfilling for me to give back. But before it became real for me to where I really felt that way, you're correct. I first had to have my minimum needs met. But I think the question goes deeper into, what is your driving force? And so you look at my younger years, my driving force was significance. I needed significance really to overcome some insecurities that I was dealing with at that age. Once you achieve a certain level of success financially, but even more, overcoming some sort of insecurities that maybe have been driving you, once you feel comfortable in that, then you can shift from seeking significance to actually honestly pursuing contribution instead of significance. And what I found is that if you're chasing significance your whole life, and what I mean by significance is things like belts or college degrees or houses or statuses, climbing the corporate ladder, whatever that is, as long as that is your driving pursuit, you'll never find fulfillment or happiness, because there's never an end. So you look at Bill Gates, I would guess, I've never met the man, but I would guess significance drove him for most of his life to become the richest man or the number one computer guy or whatever. And then when you hit a point in life where you're like, you know, I've really achieved all that I needed to do, I no longer have these insecurities that are driving me, it's no longer fulfilling to get another college degree or to make another dollar or to get a fancier car. At some point, the fulfillment or the excitement of that goes away. And I think I see this a lot of times with jiu-jitsu competition, that this might relate to some of your audience, where you have to get another medal and you have to get another medal. Well, at some point, that medal doesn't give you the juice that it once did when you were still chasing it. And then there's the reality of getting older, and you start accepting that, hey, I can no longer physically do the things that I used to be able to do, or even mentally. And so if you, number one, try to fulfill your own insecurities, and then number two, consciously shift towards contribution, where you at first it might be fake, where you're in trying to fake that you're offering something, but then at some point you may actually start seeing the rewards of giving to other people, and that will supersede your desire to chase significance.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot of good stuff in there. You know, you spoke about jiu-jitsu and that quest for significance, and I think that you know, that black belt quest or the black belt journey that we most of us like are on at the moment, if you're not already a black belt, that is a big example of that. You know, you think that, oh, it's something's going to be different when I'm a black belt. Something, you know, I'll be the person I want to be, or I'll have these magical powers or whatever right. It is. And I mean, I can only speak from my own experience. It's the weirdest thing. My black belt is one of the most sacred things to me, but at the same time, it's just, it's not what I thought it was. It didn't, right. I didn't turn into something different when I got it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on a different path now. I'm trying to achieve certain other things in my life, and it's weird. I know what's going to happen when I achieve them. It's going to be that same combination of fulfillment, but also tinged with like a ring of hollowness to it.
Just disappointment sometimes for me.
I mean, disappointment is a good one. So I guess, yeah, maybe the answer is, as you said, it's to find things or to use things to motivate you that are intrinsically, that don't have that kind of compromise attached to them. And I guess helping other people is one of them. I've never felt hollow after helping someone else or helping someone else achieve their objectives or goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enough with all this Gandhi bullshit, dude. Let's be straight up honest about it. Like, jiu-jitsu guys want to achieve their goals specifically, then even after listening to that, they still want their black belt, or they still want their purple belt, or they still want to win the comp. You know, how would you, using your goal setting jiu-jitsu, what advice would you give to these guys? If, let's say, John Smith out there in Idaho, he is a purple belt and he wants to get his brown belt, and the way to do that, he thinks, is to win a specific competition, and that's his goal and his focus, and he wants to go from point A to point B. What would you advise to this guy?
That's an interesting question, and it makes me realize like how many times people have told you the belt shouldn't matter, but the only people that say that are the ones that already have the belt that
exactly
you want, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
So I think it does matter, and it's really a silly let me give a counter example. My kid's in Cub Scouts and then Boy Scouts, and he wants these awards on his shirt, and they're really silly when you're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same as our belts. It's the same as getting promoted in the corporate world. We just never outgrow that. So, but it's not wrong. It's a good thing to have something to pursue, to give you something to focus. So I think chasing the belts and the medal is a really healthy thing. There's nothing wrong with it. And so I guess if you want to set a goal to move forward into the next belt or the next tournament, I think the very first thing is clarity on what game it is you're actually playing. And so if your goal is to win a tournament, which I'm not a high level competitor, I've competed a lot when I was younger, but it's, are you trying to learn how to win the tournament? Because that's very different than learning self-defense, which we often start when we enter jiu-jitsu. And it's very different than your regular training that you do in the gym. And so it's focus on whatever your goal is. If your focus is to become a higher belt, that might be different than winning a tournament. And so I think clarity is the very first thing with any kind of goal setting, is what exactly is it that you want? What game are you playing? And what are the steps to getting there? What is the shortcut? What is the fastest path? And eliminating all of the other distractions. So if you want to win a jiu-jitsu tournament, it wouldn't make much sense to be doing all of these other things like self-defense or getting complicated in classes, taking a bunch of classes for jiu-jitsu that don't necessarily apply to your game that will help you lead to winning tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if that makes sense or not.
That makes total sense. It's been my first of all, the first thing that struck me when you said that about the belts is you said how it's only people who have them who say they're not important. And, you know, I watched a film about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. It's my brother's favorite film, and he made me sit down and watch it with him one night. It's called The Aviator, and it's about the Recluse, Millionaire, Aviator, Howard Hughes. It's a Martin Scorsese film. It's for anyone listening and for yourself, if you haven't watched it, I cannot give this film high praise. One of the most powerful movies I've ever seen. And there's one particular event that takes place in the film. He's sitting with his girlfriend's family. They're this wealthy New England old money family, and the mother remarks about how our money isn't important to us, and the Howard Hughes character just says, "That's because you have some." And
It's
it
true.
struck me, dude. It struck me like straight to my core, and I realized it's very easy to take things for granted when you have them, but there are many people in this world that are struggling and striving for things that you already have, like clean drinking water and health and maybe a partner or whatever it is. There's a lot of people out there that don't even have those things, and I guess it comes back to gratitude and being grateful for that. But w the second thing I wanted to note that I thoroughly agree with you on is, that idea of clarity. What is it that you want? Because, I sat down. For me, my big kick now is financial goals and financial. That's my main focus, and I realized that, I said I wanted to be financially set, but I didn't know what that meant. Like, was that having $50,000 or $1 million or $50 million? And then even once I figured out that I didn't know what that figure was, it's because I didn't understand what the cost of the lifestyle I wanted was. So I had to sit down and analyze, okay, how much income do I want per month? And then that meant I needed to figure out what are my expenses per month. And that, I had to keep asking these questions and keep drilling down until I got clarity on, oh, okay, cool. If I get to this specific financial figure, then I will have achieved my goals. And it ties into what you said, which is the elimination of distraction. I really believe that with there's a basic recipe for the achievement of any goal, which is two ingredients, and that is will and focus. Without those two things, you're most likely to fail, but with those two things, you can achieve pretty much anything. Would you agree?
Yeah, what the exercise you talked about with your money and business is so spot on. Like when I work with clients, either A, they have income issues, they want to organize their finances, or B, they want to grow their business. It's always the same thing that you just did in the beginning. It's saying, what is it that you want? And they don't know. Most people do not know. They haven't done what you just said, where they sat down and said, here is what I want. Because once you're clear of what you want, then you just simply reverse engineer of how you get there. What is it going to take to get here? And like you said, eliminate these other things and then focus specifically on the one thing that you need to do each day or each hour to achieve that end goal after you've reverse engineered it. So I agree with you completely.
That's awesome. Well, cool. It means I'm on the right track, dude. If the guy who wrote the book agrees with me, then I'm on the right track. So man, let's get back to the book that connected me to you, and that is Motivation, Stories on Life and Success from BJ Black Belts, because this is a very, very cool book. Can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to write it and how you went about making that happen?
Yeah, we kind of indirectly started speaking about it earlier, and I'll connect the dots, is that what I had been doing in my work earlier was earlier books were about personal finance and business. So this was way off topic, and I kind of hit a point in my life where I had felt like I had realized all of my goals that I had set in my life. I had done the things that I wanted to do, and then some. And when I kind of finished my master's degree and I had my business kind of plugging along, and I was kind of like, well, what's next? What do I want to achieve next? And then at the same time, I was hitting a point where my jiu-jitsu was kind of maybe at a stalemate, where I was getting older and I had a lot of injuries, and there was 20-year-old kids who had done jiu-jitsu far less than me, but were getting better than me. And really excelling in the tournament scene and stuff. And I started questioning myself, where I was used to being one of the better guys. And then I start having this internal dialogue of what drives these people who compete at a really high level in jiu-jitsu for very long periods of time. But it wasn't just jiu-jitsu. To me, jiu-jitsu was the metaphor for all things in life. So what drives a Bill Gates? What drives a Michael Jordan? What drives anybody to succeed at high levels? And I had some ideas in my own life where I felt like it's usually some sort of insecurity, some sort of internal struggle or dysfunction as a child. And so I wonder, once somebody already achieves that high level, why do they keep going? What drives them? And so those questions made me kind of want to research that. And writing a book enables you to kind of have weird conversations with people that you wouldn't otherwise have. And so the book kind of gave me an opportunity to go meet some people and talk to them and have these conversations and see if there was some common denominators about what drove them. And see, are those things they're born with? Are those part of what their environment was when they grew up? Or were those things that we could learn from and apply to our own life? And that was the outcome of the book. And I used jiu-jitsu because it was my interest. But I thought somebody could read the book and connect it to business or connect it to basketball or golf or relationships or anything. So that was kind of the driving force.
Mm-hmm. So... I don't want to keep plugging it, but it is a really, really good book. I wanted to ask you, which is your favorite of the stories? Because for those of you who don't know, it's, how many black belts did you interview?
For this one, I did 12 different guys.
12.
Well, one girl and 12 people total.
Okay. So which was your favorite of those 12?
Everyone asks me that. And it's such a hard question to answer because each person in my mind adds a different piece to the whole book. And so one story alone doesn't tell the story that will connect to everybody. And there were different parts of literally every single person's story that connected to me. Mm-hmm. That said, the one that meant the most to me, and I hate to say this, but it was the Mario Sperry story. And that is simply because he was my beginning of jiu-jitsu back in the late 90s. I was going to Torrance. It was a 3-hour drive, and I was learning jiu-jitsu from the original Gracie family. But then I found the Mario Sperry videos, and so I started training in the garage with those videos on VHS. And so, in essence, he was kind of my first teacher, really, my regular teacher, but he never had met me. I never met him. But much of my game today came from him. And so in some ways, I kind of put him up on a pedestal as this kind of faraway figure that I looked up to. And so when I met him, we got to sit down for several hours. And at least in my mind, the conversation was like we were a couple of friends having a good talk. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really neat experience for me. But, you know, every story will connect with a different person for mm-hmm. a different reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think I read this book going on 7 months ago, 8 months ago, so I can't remember. But I think it was Jeff Glover's one. That was the one where he had issues with his father, if I'm not mistaken. Bill Cooper.
Bill Cooper.
I always get those two guys confused. That one really affected me because you know I definitely haven't had relatively speaking a difficult life. Compared to many people in this world. But I kind of assumed that the average jiu-jitsu black belt was, you know, just a middle-class dude who'd had like a, you know, a normal ride. But reading that just blew my mind to see the adversity that guy overcame in his family life. It was very, very profound.
That's a powerful story and one that I cherish. He's such a great guy. When I started with Frangia, his coach, he was just a white or a blue belt. He was just a kid. And to see what he had gone through. And what was really neat about that is he's a local to my area. So I've known him for years. And so during those struggles that he had some adversity with some of his relationships, of course. And a lot of people came up to me after and said, you know, I'm so glad I read that because now I understand him and understand what he was going through. And I have a completely different perspective. And it's so much easier to look at somebody and see what's happening, but it's a whole another thing to understand what they're going through and be able to express empathy and compassion, you know?
So true.
It was a great story for that. And yeah. I'm so grateful that he shared and opened up with me like he did. He's just a great guy.
To me, the book is worth it just for that one, that story alone. And there's 12 of those. So it's just, I thoroughly recommend this book. It's not often I recommend jiu-jitsu books, but this one is really good, guys. I recommend you check it out.
Yeah, I'm flattered. I appreciate that.
My man, so I think this is probably close to the end of our conversation. But what I'd like to ask you about just before we go, you've also written another book called Shots Fired, which is about, if I'm not mistaken, the psychology of police, not police shootings, but what happens when police draw their weapons and fire. Is that correct?
It's exactly, yeah.
So I'd like to know, what I'm always trying to do is I really want, when I have these conversations, to I want to become a better person through having a clearer perspective of the world. And then I want to share that with the people that are listening. And I live in America now. I'm going to become an American citizen one day, I'm assuming. And there's like a, I guess, a psychic hurt on the collective consciousness in this country. And that is, there's so much animosity and so many rifts between so many different groups. But I think one of the ones that is the biggest is that between the police and the community. And I think that there is definitely something to that on the police's part. There's, I'm sure, a lot of douchebag cops out there that treat people, especially people of color, badly. But I also think a lot of it is exaggerated and overhyped by the media, and that most policemen are generally, especially the ones I've met, good people who just are doing a job and trying to do it as best as possible. And I guess what I would love from you, having written a book like that, is could you give us some insight into the psychology of these policemen that are under this huge amount of stress, and maybe help us understand why sometimes they're forced to take these drastic actions?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. I've talked a lot about this in other interviews at depth, and it's a very important discussion. And what that book is very similar to the motivation book. I interview people who've shot and killed somebody. And if you liked Bill Cooper's story, that's kind of a tame version compared to what all of these other officers have gone through when they get in a shooting. And so the purpose of that book was to show that it's a far more complicated decision, and the consequences for the officer are far greater than anyone can ever realize. And so the attitude in the media or in society from people who are not connected with officers is that cops make these cavalier decisions to shoot somebody as if it's really no issue to them. But it's a very traumatic situation for most of them, and a very complicated decision that they have to make under very difficult circumstances. But I agree with you that there are cops who make mistakes all the time. And I've talked to, I don't want to waste too much time unless you're interested,
Very
but
interested.
jiu-jitsu is really a solution to a lot of these issues, because you don't see cops that do jiu-jitsu getting in these extremely excessive force situations. If they do, it's extremely rare. And it's because jiu-jitsu creates a calmness and a comfort under pressure that most human beings don't ever experience. And most cops are not trained at a very high level. And so cops are experiencing the same fear and emotions that everyone else would when faced with the potential of death. And so the possibility of them, quote unquote, overreacting is very high. I'm giving you a lot of stuff here, so
Yeah, go for it, go for it.
I'll pause and let you jump in if you have any questions or.
No, please continue. I love this line of thinking, and I'd never put that together. I mean, I'd heard the I'd heard about how jiu-jitsu helps you stay calm under pressure, and I've definitely experienced that in my own life, but I'd never connected that to the fact that it could help reduce something like police being forced to use deadly force or violence.
Yeah, I've preached it often, and I think that is the solution, if not the only solution. It's responsible for 80% of solving these problems. And here's an example that people might relate to. On day one in jiu-jitsu, if you put a student on their back and you put someone on top of their chest, and you tell that person, rain blows on this person's face until you kill that person, how is the bottom person going to react? They're going to panic and do all kinds of crazy things that are unorthodox for an experienced jiu-jitsu person. Now you take a jiu-jitsu black belt and put him on his back, and take somebody and put him on his chest and say, rain blows on his face until you kill him. The jiu-jitsu black belt knows exactly what to do, is going to remain calm and do the right things in a controlled manner. So now you take a police officer who's 22 years old, has maybe never been in a fight in their life, and they've been given a very rudimentary amount of training, and you say, go out there and deal with that person who's been a criminal his entire life in and out of prison, and he may want to kill you. Now go deal with that person, and that person's fighting you.
That's an excellent analogy. That is an excellent analogy. Or, I guess another one, which is far less intense, is the police scenario, but you take a 23-year-old kid who's just graduated and you put him in a high-stress corporate environment or in a, I don't know, high-stress government job, if there is such a thing, or even in the military.
Right.
You know, no, that is a fantastic, you've just opened up a very interesting line of thinking, and I appreciate that. I mean, this conversation was worth it for that alone. I think for my own self, I would like to start working more closely with law enforcement in some way or another, just because, you know, all the cops I've met have just been genuinely good dudes. You know, I had Manuel Flores on the show a few episodes ago. He's a police officer in Tucson, and, you know, he's a jiu-jitsu black belt as well. And some of the stories that just his general presence, you know, he seems like a cool guy. And I get that over and over again. I guess there are some of the very mentally inflexible, rigid, sort of, you know, racist, not cool cops out there. But I just pray I don't ever interact with any of those dudes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're if you're ever down in California, stop by. I'll bring you to the academy and let you teach a little bit, introduce you to that world, and show you what that world is like at the police academy.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd absolutely love that. Chuck, that was such an enjoyable conversation. The time just flew by. If the listeners want to learn more about you and they want to get copies of Motivation and Shots Fired and Perfect Life Manifesto, is there anywhere in particular you recommend that they go to online?
Yeah, two places. My home base is chuckryland.com. That's chuckryland.com. That's where you can connect with me and find all my stuff. And then if you want to get the books fastest, cheapest, easiest, just go to amazon.com and you can get them, you know, a day or two over from Prime.
Great. Well, Chuck, my man, thank you so much. Blessings on you and your family, and I'm sure we'll have you on as a guest again in the future.
Thank you. I really appreciate talking to you.
I love that one. That was a great pleasure for me to record that show, and I really like the way that man thinks. Goal setting is something that it's been such a big part of my life, but I have a love-hate relationship with it, because, you know, the one theory is that you'll never get anywhere without setting goals, or it's very difficult to make progress without setting goals. And the flip side of the coin is that if you are constantly setting goals, you never really get to just let life unfold, because you're so focused on forcing your idea of the way things should be onto reality. You never just really are able to see some of the things that life may want to give you that might be even better for you or better suited to you than your goals. And it's something I go back and forth on all the time. I guess like everything else at the highest levels in life, it is a paradox. You need to be able to set goals and focus on them, but also not let them control you too much. Again, I do recommend Chuck's book, Motivation. You can get it on Amazon, and it is a great, great read. Very, very cool. So guys, I hope you enjoyed that. And now we got some more cool, interesting, insightful, and wise jiu-jitsu guests coming up for you over the next few weeks. And also remember, Master Academy, my online academy membership site, is coming very, very soon, and it is going to be something special, I promise you. Okay guys, peace out.